Hello and welcome to the IntraFish podcast, where we bring you the most interesting and compelling seafood news. I'm Drew Cherry, editor-in-chief, joined today by John Fiorillo, executive editor, and John Evans, correspondent. Today, we are going to be looking at two iconic British foods, and we have expert and expat and Brit John Evans with us to help us understand a bit about these foods and the importance of them. And of course, they're seafoods. The price of the raw material that goes into fish and chips and into fish fingers, which in the US are known as fish sticks, has gotten to levels where it is squeezing the margins dramatically for people that own fish and chip shops, and also pushing consumers that are used to purchasing those fish fingers as a staple to other products, or to stop purchasing, or to trade down to fish fingers made with cheaper raw material. But we're going to talk about all this. I want to first turn it over to you, John. I mean, nothing is more iconic than fish and chips. It is the double-decker bus and the black cab and fish and chips. They're all one and the same. And I guess the queen, congratulations on her jubilee. So this is a perfect opportunity, since we're Anglophiles today. Tell us, how big is the fish and chip sector? I think people will be surprised.
There are 10,500 fish and chip shops in the whole of the United Kingdom, although decades ago there were many more, actually, when fish used to come into Grimsby. And at the time of the Second World War, people used to sell fish and chips through a hole in the wall in their houses. It's obviously been distilled down now to what it is, but it's still, as you say, an iconic industry, and a lot of people buy fish and chips on Friday. They still finish work and they line up outside the fish and chip shops, or and buy their fish and chips, and you can smell that. There is a distinctive smell of malt vinegar that you can only smell it, you will know. And what can I say? The number of fish and chip UK fish and chip shops are now willing to consider putting alternative species on their menu because of the soaring price of cod and haddock is rising. And for a long, long time, it's always been about cod and haddock for British consumers. They haven't wanted to eat anything else. But now, with the rising cost of everything, not just fish, by the way, of potatoes, because of the rising cost of fertilizer, and farmers planting less potatoes because of the rising cost of fertilizer, and of course, wheat and sunflower oil, of which Ukraine and Russia are major exporters, that's pushed the prices much higher. And also, let's not forget the petrol prices, which is all linked into the post pandemic and the war in Ukraine as well.
Okay, so let me. Take things back a bit, because you know it's fascinating when you think about the number of fish and chip shops, and that you said that there were more. Taking us back to say a classic British kid childhood in the United States, a burger and a shake are kind of part of childhood. It's sort of, you know, what you might go get if you were a teenager, or your parents might take you for a treat or whatever. So tell us a bit just from your childhood, and just tell us what role fish and chips plays kind of culturally for the United Kingdom, but also just for the British working class, which it was, as you said, it was a food that you could grab and go. I mean, it's tell us just about how it played in your life.
I can remember my dad taking me regularly and disappearing regularly to a fish and chip shop called Crutchley's. And as I said, there was always that distinctive smell of malt vinegar outside. Fish and chips have always been wrapped in newspaper. Going back further, they've been wrapped in newspaper these days, and they may still be wrapped in newspaper, but that's on the outside of white paper. But it's just all part of the experience. And as you say, it has been typically seen as a working class food. Another thing that you will get with it is a thing that's just typically only in a fish and chip shop, which is mushy peas, which are peas kind of ground into a kind of paste, and they are served. There's all kinds of things that you get in there, like pickled eggs and other things, and even if you're talking about seafood, jars of cockles and things like that, depending on the fish and chip shop. But yeah, I mean, Friday was always the day, and obviously Britain is not majority a Catholic country, but you know, Easter as well, people queuing up outside fish and chip shops. So it's, as you say, it's part of the fabric of the country, really.
I mean, I recall, you know, your coverage on fish and chips over the past couple of years, primarily prior to really feeling all this inflationary pressure, was COVID. And your reporting on COVID was fascinating because it seemed that, you know, the country and sort of the British consumer seemed pretty intent on keeping chippies going. It seemed important, and there seemed to be a lot of support, even you know, in the height of the lockdowns, to go get fish and chips, even though it's not traditionally seen as maybe something that you would take back home. I mean, there are takeaway fish and chips, but it's not something necessarily you'd have delivered by Uber. But
certainly not. No, I mean, you would go and get it yourself. You'd get it takeaway. But then I think what happened is that people, or I should say the fish and chip shops, have responded to what other eating outlets are doing with the delivery, and not just with the delivery, they had sort of spaces on the curb outside where people could park so they could hand the fish and chips to them so they wouldn't have to come into the shop. They also had people spaced out. They had glass screens for the first time between themselves and customers, another way, and contactless paying. They adapted, to be quite honest. It was very impressive how they adapted so quickly to an environment that changed very rapidly, particularly at the start of COVID.
Yeah, I you know, just from your reporting and from what the National Federation of Fish Friers, the association representing the chippies, have said, in a way, COVID, as you said, it was impressive they were able to move through it, but now there's real fear that we're going to see thousands of fish and chip shops close. And, you know, is there, just tell us a bit about, you talked about inflation, but is there a sense that there's anything to sort of change the direction of travel with this pressure?
I think it's going to depend on the economic outlook, to be quite honest with you. At the moment, it's the first time they've sort of put a figure on it, or close to a figure on it. And they said, you know, a third might go of the 10,500. But the hope is that even so, that the other fish and chip shops would pick up the trade. So yes, it's kind of difficult to say, really. I mean, suddenly the petrol prices fell and other things, the price of other things fell, then they might be in a different situation. But at the moment, and for quite some time to come, it doesn't look like they're going to be.
Right. You've spoken with Andrew Crook, and he's the president of the National Fish Friers Federation. He's given a lot of thoughts on this and a lot of warnings on this. And this week he spoke at a Norwegian seafood event, in part sort of, I think, communicating to the Norwegian cod and haddock suppliers. Norway is one of the largest suppliers to the UK, along with Iceland and Russia. And just communicating that this is, it's really kind of an untenable situation. You know, I mean, we're talking about, in some cases, cod being 40% higher than it was when you're looking at fresh cod. Or I'm sorry, let me revise that. A 64% rise over the over recent weeks for yeah. fresh H&G headed and gutted Atlantic cod. So this is all compounded too by Russia's invasion of Ukraine, which there is a threat of a 35% tariff on Russian whitefish hanging over people's heads, and fears that the chip shops won't be able to get Russian product, which actually is quite important, correct? It goes much of it goes via China for secondary processing, but some does go direct. But
yeah, it's about 40% of their fish comes from Russia. So they are concerned about it. But at the same time, I mean, obviously, there's as you mentioned, there's the pressures that might force businesses out of business. But at the same time, you know, the industry body says, you know, we can't let this continue in Ukraine. So we have to back whatever the government decides to do, whether it puts a 35% tariff on or not. So yeah, I mean, it's another thing, yet another thing that they're trying to contend with. And another thing that we haven't mentioned so far, and is mentioned quite often when you speak to people in industry, is that some fish and chip shop owners don't play by the rules. They don't pay the minimum wage, or they cut corners in other ways, and that makes it more difficult for some fish and chip businesses to stay in competition with them. I mean, some fish and chip shops, they'll sell on the size of their portion and the quality of their product, and they'll sell for, you know, £3, nearly $4 more than their rivals, and yet they're playing the competition against you know, others who don't stick by the rules. So that's another sort of burden they have to bear.
Now, you know, I recall, John, when this was years ago, when we were reporting on this, and it was at a time when some of these species, farmed whitefish species or kind of non-cod and haddock species, were starting to creep onto menus, or at least the public was becoming aware that there was whitefish that was farmed, which there really wasn't an awareness. And I believe it hit kind of the headlines of the Daily Mail and the Sun and those types of papers, you know, kind of it's just saying how blasphemous it was that that people would be putting, you know, these products into their fish and chips. But what are the options now that fish and chip shops might have replacing cod and haddock or trialing it?
So, I mean, some are already using hake, which they may have done for quite some time. Others are now looking into species like tilapia. And I think one or two have even tried pangasius in the past. And that is commonly known as bassa, which, because pangasius is the word pangasius is not known in Britain. But they've put this sort of word that's sort of more acceptable to public ears, bassa, out, and that could be another one that maybe appears more. But I think it'll just come down to price in the end, whether people can or will decide to cut back on their weekly budget and maybe have fish and chips once in every 2 weeks or once a month or something, rather than, you know, having it more regularly.
Right. And, you know, just switching over to fish fingers, and another food item that is very popular in the UK, fish finger sandwiches is one thing that you don't find a lot in the United States, but it is a popular thing in the United Kingdom. And it's another food item that is, again, our colleague Dominic Welling and I were laughing that it's actually considered a staple. Or when the Office for National Statistics in the United Kingdom tracks grocery items and tracks staples, it's quite interesting that fish fingers is one of those staples it tracks. And, you know, they did highlight that obviously there's been some price inflation there. And Dominic looked at, in particular, cod fish finger sales, because, again, cod is what Brits think. Oftentimes, no matter what they're eating, they think it might be cod if it's a white fish. But what we have seen is, as the price pressure that I mentioned, that the cod price inflation has gone up, we have seen a pretty stark decline in sales volume, which we hadn't really seen. We hadn't really seen before this type of drop in correlation with price like this. It's been more of a larger question of when consumers might kind of get fed up, so to speak. And now we're seeing that it's definitely happening. At least statistically, we can see it happening. For the 52 weeks through around late April, compared with the year prior, 2021, we've seen cod prices up again sharply in cod fish fingers. You've seen a rise of, let me just take a look here. Price per kilo of cod fish fingers is up 9.6%, and price per unit also 6.7%. So price is up pretty dramatically. Now, even more interesting is the sales volume that has dropped off. You've seen cod fish finger sales fall 20% in value and 27% by volume during that period. So wiping out, thousands and thousands of tons of sales of cod fish fingers. Now, what's been interesting has been that there are some beneficiaries, and whether or not they will continue to be, I guess, is a question. But what we have seen in the UK is we've seen some trading down to Alaska pollock. And Rachel Sapin, you've been covering pollock extensively, or our lead on that. So talk to us a bit about what's happening in the Alaska pollock sector. We just started what's called the bee season. What is happening with that market, and how might that affect this shift over toward a cheaper option?
Yeah, so Alaska pollock is still kind of doing pretty incredible, given that consumers are shunning a lot of protein, including some seafood, because of inflation remaining historically high. But pollock is still, pretty much a deal compared to other seafoods, including cod. I know we did a story recently, I think we were just talking about this on cod, that, pollock fish fingers are significantly cheaper than cod. And just in the U.S. as well, pollock just remains a good value, even though pollock itself is seeing record prices. I just heard from a lot of sources that they think it's even going to go beyond the $5,000 per metric ton mark for the PBO fillet block, which is just really, it's like a 15-year high. So it's just really relative to everything else. And even though it seems expensive, everything else is more expensive, is kind of where pollock's at.
Well, that's a good point, because I didn't mention this when I was talking about the cod fish finger story that Dominic did, but in comparing those, just to give you a sense of the price per kilo difference, we're talking about for pollock fish fingers about $5.50 per kilo. Versus cod fish fingers, which are $8.50 per kilo. So we're talking about a significant a difference here. We're talking about a 54% higher cost. And so, as you say, trading down from cod to pollock, and even with pollock's high levels, it still may sort of end up being a one of the winners here in whitefish, just because it continues to be significantly cheaper than cod and haddock. So, Rachel, the bee season, Alaska pollock's bee season starts today. That's the second season of the year. And it's so unusual, because the A season, we had sort of cycled through prior to kind of, there was already inflation, but not the explosive inflation that we've seen. And obviously, all the sanctions against Russia had not come to pass yet. And so what are executives saying about bee season then? Are there, what's the sense of what we might expect either from catches or from the market? Are they able to sort of feel where things might go?
Yeah, I think they think that, things are going to go relatively well. And that, they've pretty much caught up on inventory, including their high value inventory. That's included PBO filet and deep skin filet. And, they have that product. And even though there was a lower total allowable catch this year, they've got plenty of customers that want it. Alaska pollock, it's largely a domestic product. So they're pretty set with the customers they sell it to. So, which are largely like the McDonald's type customers, that do the Filet-O-Fish. And they're not feeling worried about that. And they're also this summer not having any coronavirus issues, really. And they are actually getting the labor they need, I've heard from a couple of processors. So, so far, things are looking pretty good for them. It's really people that are just kind of scrambling to replace their Russia products that might be having issues. But anyone who's been kind of with Alaska Pollock, buying Alaska Pollock, shouldn't have a problem.
Right. And some of the reporting that's been done by our European colleagues as well, looking at what the alternatives might be, there's really nothing quite, there's nothing that can quite fill that gap. So it's really put people that are purchasing Russian pollock and Russian cod in a really tough bind because, as you mentioned, Rachel, even if there is massive demand, it's, from your reporting, nobody seems to be particularly excited about that as an opportunity in the U.S. simply because it seems to me like their fish is already committed to customers.
Yeah, exactly. A lot of the producers I speak with, the pollock producers, are very much like, we have our customers, we work with them a long time. It would take a lot for us to switch, to selling to someone else. Cause they have their committed customers and they don't really have plans to switch.
So plenty of chaos and confusion in the whitefish industry. It's all interlinked. And that's kind of what's so fascinating about the sector is no matter whether you're harvesting hake in South America or Alaska pollock in Russia any other of the white fish around the world or farming it in Vietnam, it's all dependent on one another. And so what's been happening in with the sanctions against Russian producers has really thrown everything up in the air. But bottom line, if you are buying anything that has whitefish inside of it, you're going to be paying more for it. All right, well, let's wrap it up there. Remember that you can find our news daily on intrafish.com. There's plenty of newsletters you can sign up for, whatever your interest might be. If you are a subscriber, that's very easy for you to get alerts on particular topics. So, for example, if you want to just track whitefish whenever we publish a story on it and you sign up for the alerts, you can get a weekly roundup of our whitefish coverage, or you can get a daily alert as it happens. So it's fantastic. We've got a lot of subscribers that have signed up for it and are using it and are very happy with it. So make sure and take advantage of that. Also, don't forget, we've launched our app, and that is easy to find on the App Store and on Google Play. And it's another great way to keep up with us on the go. It's the best way to look at our news on a mobile device. So download it and take it for a spin. Okay, everyone, we'll look forward to talking to you next time.